Hey, you guys, it's Andrea with From Mrs. to Ms. I am here today with a wonderful woman named Kel Cal. Hi, Kel. How are you?
Hello, I am fantastic. How are you, Andrea?
I am great. I am great. So to introduce you guys to Kel, she is an aspiring mindset coach, an author, and the insightful voice behind the, love this, Dear Dumb Bitch podcast. Hell yeah. In 2018, Kel courageously embarked on a journey of self-discovery, leaving behind the facade of a seemingly perfect life trapped in an emotionally abusive marriage. This pivotal decision led her to the shores of Bali, where she's joining us from Bali today, where she found solace and embarked on a transformative path towards genuine happiness. I love that. Like, that just sums it up right there, exactly what you went through, which is amazing. So thank you for joining me. We said it is awfully early there. It's about 7:30 in the morning. You're a little bit ahead of me. You're on Tuesday, right? Yeah. Well, I'm still on Monday night. So thanks for coming on and getting up early for me. Appreciate it.
Of course. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. So, okay, let's start at the beginning. Okay. So tell us, let's go back to like 2018, prior to, what was your life like and what was your marriage like at that time?
Okay. So I'm going to take it back even a little further. Let's go back to 2017.
Okay.
And I was married. I was living in Florida and I thought I was living my dream life because my life looked perfect from the outside. Like I said, I lived in sunny South Florida. I lived in this beautiful home that I remodeled to perfection. I had a successful business, lots of money in the bank. I had six-pack abs and perfectly styled blonde hair. I drove a Porsche. Like I had all the things.
Yes, everything that everybody wants and dreams of.
Yes.
Yeah.
And inside, I was miserable. I was miserable. And I had this feeling. I was like, I thought I'd be happy by now.
Yeah.
And I knew the marriage that I was in was not healthy. Mm-hmm. I did not realize how not just toxic, but truly abusive it was until I really left and I had more clarity and perspective, because when you're in it, it's an absolute haze.
Yeah.
But I had this sensation of just feeling like I was drowning every single day of my life. And I actually initiated leaving the marriage in December of 2017. I call that the day that my intuition took over, because I had no plan whatsoever to initiate ending the marriage, but my intuition had other plans for me.
And now, was
that
it,
was,
can,
yeah.
Can I just ask real quick, was it it emotionally abusive, physically, all of the above, kind of everything?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, no. So it was never physically abusive. It was just extremely emotionally abusive. So gaslighting, manipulation, control, isolation, like every aspect of emotional abuse.
Yeah. And what was he like? What was your ex-husband like? What was his traits that he had? Was there anything good? I should say that.
Yeah. Yeah. So in hindsight, I could see that he was the perfect partner for me at the time, because he was a mirror and he was showing me the lessons I needed to learn, but I didn't see that at the time. And, you know, he was very charming and he was a bit like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, so to speak, right? Like in public, it was one version of him. And then behind the scenes, within our personal life, it was a very different version of him.
Scary.
And deep down beneath it all, I could now see his insecurities, his pain, his trauma that was being projected on to me.
Wow. And so this took you a while to kind of see this and come to light, right? Because you're probably caught up in all the good stuff. You know, there was a lot of good stuff, but the bad really outweighed. So, okay. So sorry to cut you off. So back to your day of intuition.
Yeah. And well, and just to expand on what you said, that's the thing with these types of relationships. They aren't bad 100% of the time, which makes it very, very challenging, because it has the highs and the lows.
Yeah.
And that's part of the abuse cycle. And you actually become addicted to that. You can become biochemically addicted to the abuse patterns, to where you're actually addicted to another person, which is a very complicated experience. But on that day, I told the then abusive, now ex-husband, that I wanted a divorce, but I did not commit to leaving at that point in time. And things did not get better. Shocking,
But
everything just escalated and amplified until it got to the point going to like March of 2018. So about
Yeah.
3 months later, where I just felt like I needed to escape, like
Oh,
immediately
wow.
leave. I felt like I could not stay in my life a
You're
second longer.
suffocating. Yep.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I took what was supposed to be a 2 week trip to visit my sister in Seattle, Washington.
Yeah.
And it was on that trip that I made the decision I knew in my heart and soul I needed to make, which was to not only leave the marriage, but to move across the country and reset my life in
Wow.
every possible way.
Wow. Okay, so I'm going to go back to your day of intuition because I want to get like a little bit more granular. So you just woke up that day and you were like, something is telling me I got to get out of this. Like, this is, I've had enough. Is that kind of how you felt, or was it?
Yeah, it was truly a divine intervention because I'm a planner. I like to know what's happening now, next, after that, plans A, B, C, and D, all of them. And there was no plan that morning. Like literally, it just happened. And it was something that I was thinking about because I was so unhappy and I knew it's not the life I wanted to live, but I was terrified. Like the thought of having that conversation was my greatest fear for many reasons.
Okay, so then you said it kind of continued on. You actually didn't leave. So what happened when you confronted him on that day that you felt this way? Did you actually confront him and say, I've had it, I'm going to do this, or how did that go about?
In December when I kind of initiated leaving but didn't commit to leaving. So I basically just said, I'm not happy in our relationship and I want a divorce. And then like the mind games came in and it was just twisted around. And after the conversation, I felt more confused than ever before.
Oh my gosh, that sucks. That's just such a terrible feeling to be, because you get all of that courage up to actually say something and do it, and then to have them twist it around and probably put it back on you. And now you're feeling like, what am I doing? Should I be leaving him? You know, yeah, then you're back in this confused state, and you were so clear in the morning, I'm sure. Okay, so those couple weeks then, or I'm sorry, it was a couple months, right? You said up until like March of 2018, everything just kind of went back to the way it was before you said anything.
Oh, yeah, except it was actually way worse because everything just amplified and it went from me wanting a divorce to if I don't change, then he's gonna leave me. And I was so terrified. I was stuck. And it was, I mean, I was a very different version of myself. I can still remember like feeling so trapped in my own life and so afraid to leave the marriage, so afraid to stay in the marriage. I was truly just living in this place of fear and survival.
Wow, that's just so scary and such a terrible place to be and feel like. I'm sorry. I'm sad for that for you, but it sounds like, okay, we've moved on. So we then what happened after that? March.
So I was given permission to take that trip. And just side note, if you need permission to do something in your life,
Yep,
you're not living your life.
that's
You're
right.
living somebody else's
The
life.
number
Like,
one
fun
problem.
fact. But I was given permission to take that trip. And from the second I got to the airport, I knew that there was no way I could ever go back because I felt the most foreign sensation, which was happiness and freedom. I could make my own decisions. I didn't feel like I was walking on eggshells. And then I had the 2 weeks with my sister and family, and it was just this breath of fresh air. So I did have some communication with him on the trip, and I let him know that I would be proceeding with filing for divorce when I got back. And that's when things got really spicy and interesting because I went back to my dream house. I was locked out. I got permission to enter, and my parents were with me because I didn't feel safe being alone with him. I literally packed my shit in garbage bags, filed for divorce, and then I went to the bank just to figure out the finances because I truly was not prepared to actually end and leave the marriage. And I
Were
was informed by the
you
bank.
independent funds at that time, or were you shared
No,
everything, or?
everything was joint because I thought
Oh,
that's what you did when you got married. You just combine
yeah.
everything. And it's like when two become one, right? Like I was just following like the rule book of life. No, and I went to the bank to figure out like the financial situation. And I will never forget the look on the banker's face as she pulled up account after account to tell me the balance was zero. And just feeling like the floor falling out beneath me because I literally went broke overnight.
Oh my God. So where was the money?
He withdrew all of
Took it.
it, which, I mean, we were both on the account. So technically, legally,
Oh
he
my
was
God.
able to do that. Yeah. So then naturally, my next stop was the Porsche dealership to return my
Yeah.
car because I could no longer afford my car payment. It
Yeah.
went from living this really privileged and successful life, and we built our business together. It
Okay.
wasn't like I married into it, right? Like we
Yeah.
truly built this business together. So then I returned the Porsche, and 2 days after filing for divorce and going back to Florida, I was on a flight back to Washington with a suitcase and a dream of a different future for my life. And
Wow.
simultaneously, I was broke. I was homeless. I ended up living with my
Yeah.
sister, and I'm so grateful for my family's support.
Yeah.
And I was determined that everything I was experiencing, all the trauma and challenges and adversities, would not be the worst thing that ever happened to me. And somehow it would become the catalyst to transform my life in every possible
Oh,
way.
I
And
love that.
fast forward to today, and
Yeah.
with 100% certainty, that's exactly what happened.
Wow. That is like crazy. That is so crazy. So you mentioned that a challenging aspect for you was kind of recognizing this most toxic relationship, right? The one
Yeah.
you had was actually with yourself, you actually said, right?
Oh,
You
yes. Yeah.
discovered that was the most toxic. So how did you kind of grapple with that realization? And what initial steps did you take to start transforming that relationship that you really had with yourself? What did you do there?
Yeah. So when I first moved to Washington, so this is like we're talking like April of 2018, I decided I'm going on my journey of self-love and self-discovery because I had this vision of truly like loving myself and having this really beautiful relationship with myself. And I was getting support. I was in a domestic violence support group. I was seeing a therapist and beginning journaling and doing some of my own practices. And I realized in hindsight that I was also still bypassing a lot of the deep inner healing that I needed to do. I discovered mindset work and thought I could think my way out, which you have to feel in order to heal. So I was really bypassing a lot of the deep inner work that I needed to do. And I developed pretty much every coping mechanism that there is, an eating disorder, a substance abuse, addiction, productivity and working out, exercising, and pretty much anything I could do to avoid myself, I was doing. And then,
I love that you said that. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm just jumping in because I have so many things that are so, I just want to touch on. I love that you said you have to feel in order to heal. And I just wanted to repeat that because that is so important. We tend to want to just gloss over it and sweep it under the rug and hope that the pain goes away and that, somebody else comes along who can just fix that for us. But it's not like that, right? You really have to work on yourself and heal yourself first and love yourself in order to move forward and find that next
And
phase.
I thought I could just skip that part. I thought I could just skip to the good part and just
Yeah.
use like positive mindset. And I became the queen of toxic positivity. But emotions are energy in motion. That means they need to move, they need to flow. And if we're not feeling them, we're suppressing them and they don't go away. It's like
Yeah.
literally envision like putting things under a rug. It's like you could
Yeah.
see the big lump. You're not fooling anyone. They're still there. But then
Yeah.
you're trying to like tiptoe
Step
around it and
over it. Yeah.
It's like, no, it's still there. So that was the life I was living. And in hindsight, yet again, because hindsight is always 2020, I could see that I recreated the life I was living in Florida, but just with myself. So it was very controlled. It was very toxic. And what else happened in 2020 is COVID. And
Yes, what a
my
time.
greatest fear came true, which was I was forced to be alone with myself. All of the distractions I was using, always working, being successful, the gym, everything that I was using to distract and avoid myself was removed. And I had to be alone with myself. And I realized, oh no, the most toxic relationship of all wasn't the relationship with him. He was just a mirror. It was truly the relationship with myself.
Wow, what a
And
discovery.
that's why I know that was like plot twist moment right there.
Yeah.
And that's really when I began to not even consciously at the time, but just I began to implement all of these practices that allowed me to begin to heal my nervous system, to connect with myself on deeper levels, to just be present with myself, and to actually begin to see what I had been avoiding that whole time.
And so what was the most prevalent thing that you found that you were avoiding? What do you think it was?
It was myself in every possible way, specifically a lot of the emotions that I had been feeling. And, I spent the summer of 2020 on a beach in Washington because there wasn't much else to do because we were forced to stay home or be outside 6 feet apart. And I spent that summer on the beach journaling. I felt called to begin reading books on spirituality. I was out in nature. I was going into the water, which is the Puget Sound, which means it's cold as fuck. So I was doing like cold exposure. And I began just doing these things that were really beginning to support my nervous system. So that way I could actually have the capacity to begin feeling. And I began to realize how disconnected I really was from myself. And then I felt called to begin meditating. So I forced myself to start meditating and I just began to start incorporating these other tools that allowed me to begin to do that deep inner work.
And those are the things that you kind of say help you experience it, like as a catalyst to unlock your highest potential, right? And
Yes.
your best self when you're doing those things. That's amazing. Oh my God, that is such a crazy story. And I loved hearing it just because it's to see you come out of that. And you're so beautiful. And I just know you're so happy. I'm like, when I say I'm like, oh my God, you're in Bali and everything. And so that's amazing. So, okay, how did you get to Bali?
Yeah, so as I know, it's like, how did I get to Bali? So my first of all, it was not like leave the marriage, end up in Bali. Like my journey took every single detour that there is, which really just means I had a lot more lessons I needed to learn to become this version of myself. So I would say my journey really took a deeper dive starting in around 2020, and that's when I really began to build my and develop my spirituality and connect with myself on deeper levels and to discover my truth and my purpose and really build the relationship with my intuition. And then let's fast forward to, so I was doing real estate at the time, and then the more I began to connect with myself and to really develop and discover my purpose, I realized I was not put here on this earth to sell houses. I could do it really well. I built a real estate business in Florida, rebuilt it in Washington, but that's not why I'm here on this earth because I'm here to share my journey, to share the messages and lessons I've learned and support other women on their journey. So I began building my coaching business and then decided to commit to my coaching business full time, transition out of my career in real estate, which was a challenging decision because that was my comfort zone. I was very successful in it. I was making a lot of money, but it wasn't aligned with my heart and my truth. And then I was looking at this girl's Instagram, and I can still remember this moment. I was sitting on my couch in my condo in Washington, and I was in a coaching program at the time, and she was in like a previous round of the coaching program. So I kind of just was familiar with her, but I was looking at her Instagram. She was from the UK and living in Bali. And I'm like, that's cool as shit. She's living her life, building her dream business. And I'm like, that's awesome. And then I heard this voice, clear as day, say, you could do that. And I'm like looking around, I'm
You
like, who
too can
said
be in
that?
Bali.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh wait, that's my intuition. And also I could do that. Like, there's no reason why I couldn't. And then I'm like, oh, well, fuck. I'm like writing into my journal, trying it on for size. I live in Bali. And I'm like, oh, it fits. And then I'm like, all right, I guess I'm moving to Bali. I'm moving across the world to a country I've never been to because I've ignored my intuition enough in my life to know that I should not ignore my intuition.
Oh my gosh. So how long from that point until you just went?
So that was in July of 2022. And I told myself January of 2023, I'm moving to Bali.
Oh my
And
God.
that's what happened.
That's what happened. So you've been there for a little over a year now. You're in a
Yes,
few
yeah,
months. Okay, so tell
yeah.
us about your life in Bali. What's that like?
Oh, Bali is the most magical, magical place. It makes complete sense why I am meant to be here. And it's very much, it's a portal. So I feel like I've lived multiple lifetimes since I've been here because I have learned so much about myself and I've gone so much deeper within my own healing and my own transformation. And the deeper that I go within myself, the deeper I can take my clients and the women that I'm here to serve and support. I also wrote my book here in Bali, and
Tell
which
us
is
about your
really, really
book. It's
exciting.
called How I Cured My Resting Bitch Face. I love it. There it is. Yes, I love it. What a great title. So tell us about your book.
Yeah, so my book really shares my journey of leaving an emotionally abusive marriage, moving across the country to restart my life, and all of the many lessons that I learned. So it shares my journey in the most unfiltered way possible. It's a very, very vulnerable expression of my life, but it also shares the framework that I use to go from settling in every aspect of my life, not just in the relationship, but in the relationship with myself and unfulfilling careers and other relationships, to truly developing unconditional love and ultimately creating a life that I'm obsessed with. So it shares my journey, but it also shares the tools, resources, and the framework for readers to use on their own personal journey.
Oh, I love that. So when you picked up to move there, I'm fascinated by this that you just picked up and moved there. It seems so like out there. I was just thinking while you were saying it, I'm like, could I do that? If I had someone in my ear say, you too could move to Bali, could I do it? So you said you'd never been there before, right?
Never.
You just.
I didn't even know a single person there.
Oh my gosh. Did you even consider any other places to go? Or you were like, that's it, that's where I'm supposed to
No,
be?
it was Bali. And I'm like, I don't even know where Bali is on a map. Like, Bali wasn't even in my awareness, but it was like, nope, you're moving to Bali. And you know, it's interesting because when I tell people how I moved to Bali, they're like, well, what about all like the planning and preparation? Like, you had to figure out all the details. And I'm like, sure, there are details involved. You got to make sure your passport is up to date and figure out your visa and where you're going to stay and live. But that wasn't the real preparation that I did. When I decided I was moving to Bali, the real work was to become the version of myself that could move across the world to a country she's never been to and didn't know anyone. And yes, I was already aligned with that, but it was embodying that version of myself on a deeper level so that I could actually show up as that version of me and do the bold move.
And were you doing your coaching, did you say before you moved or once you moved there?
I had started my business before I moved.
And so it just kind of really translated really well to going there because now you were living what you're preaching, right?
Exactly. And I really viewed it as me embodying the message that I share with women, which is stop settling. Like, remember who you are. We are such magical and powerful beings. And when we change what we believe is possible for ourselves, we change what is possible. Because if you had told me back in 2018 that one day I would be living in Bali, I would have been like, put the crack pipe down. Like, what are you talking about? I have PTSD and I'm like a shit show, like captain of the Hot Mess Express. And back then it wasn't possible for me. But it's really interesting because when I first moved to Washington and was restarting my life on the journey of self-love and self-discovery, I got a tattoo. I got this lotus tattoo
Ooh,
on my
nice.
wrist here.
Yes,
And it
beautiful.
was my symbol of intention for my journey of self-love and self-discovery, because the lotus essentially grows through the mud and becomes this beautiful flower, which is really what I viewed my life, because I was in the mud and I'm like,
Oh,
nope,
it's
it's going to be a
beautiful.
beautiful flower. And when I was in Bali, I remembered that the man who did this tattoo, so me and my, I just picked some random tattoo shop near my sister's house where I was living. And the man who did it was named Agus, and he was from Bali. Like, what
No
are the
way.
odds? that in this small little town in Washington, there's a guy from Bali who does my tattoo. So it's like the
No.
universe knew this all along. And I didn't even remember that until I was actually in Bali
How
because he did another
cool.
tattoo on my ankle. I have a palm tree tattoo. And one morning, I'm standing on the rooftop watching the sunrise, just having the most beautiful moments, looking at the palm tree silhouettes. And I'm like, that looks just like my tattoo. And I'm like, wait, a
Wait.
goose did that tattoo and
Oh
he was
my
from
God.
Bali. This was
So it
part of the divine
is.
plan all along.
Yes. That is amazing. Yeah. He probably saw that same palm tree and the same sunset you were looking at. I mean, how incredible is that? It's amazing. It's amazing. So how, tell us how you feel like one can heal and transcend from trauma, because I know you kind of talk about this in your coaching. How do you think they can do that?
Looking at the relationships in our life, they're always a reflection of the relationship that we have with ourselves. And for the longest time, I was making the ex the villain. I was making myself a victim, and I was really playing into victim consciousness. So whether you have experienced an abusive relationship or a toxic relationship or not, we were all on this journey of personal development if we choose to be. But it requires us to really accept radical personal responsibility for our life. Because for as long as we are blaming someone or something else, we can't make changes and we're putting ourselves into the box of being a victim. So whether it's we're blaming the ex or we're blaming our childhood or we're blaming our job or this or that, we can't make changes from that place. And as a society, we have really become addicted to being the victim. We've become addicted to disempowering ourselves because it feels good. It feels good in the moment to make it be about someone else. But the moment that we accept that responsibility from a place of love and compassion, because if we're blaming ourselves, we're still blaming and outsourcing our power. But the moment we recognize that we are the common denominator in our life, we look at the patterns that we're living and we do the work to heal what's beneath the patterns, that's when we actually get to make those internal changes that change our external reality. Because for most of my life, I tried to change the external. I wanted other people to change. I tried to change the job or this or that. But changing the external reality doesn't change your internal reality.
Yeah,
It's the
it
opposite.
masks
You
it.
have to make those internal shifts. Exactly.
And I think that is definitely the hardest part for people to understand. And it probably takes a while for it really to set in to do that, because that's what we want to do. We just want to, like I said, just gloss it over. We want to mask it by blaming somebody else or not taking full responsibility for it. And until you do that, you're never going to grow and heal from something like that. Yeah, that's really, really, really tough. So, you've talked about kind of the importance of healing your inner child and somatics. And I just wanted to say, for those that don't know, somatics refers to the study of the body as experienced from within, including the physical sensations, emotions, and movements. And so you look at that as a way to promote healing, which I love, and kind of self-awareness. So tell us a little bit about that.
So inner child work and somatics were two of the missing pieces of my puzzle of healing for quite some time. So inner child work is really building the relationship with our inner child, which is the version of ourself that exists in our present reality. And it's the version of ourself, usually from the ages of like 2 to 8 years old. And it really coincides with our subconscious programming because that is essentially when our subconscious programming was developed. And the more that we can begin to build and cultivate a relationship with our inner child, we're able to unlock and access our subconscious and look at the beliefs. We're able to look at the pain and the emotions that child version of ourself is still holding on to. Because think about children. They are very much like me, I, mine. And that's what children do. They create different stories and narratives about the experiences that they had. And they also really hold on to all of the emotions that they experience because they don't have the internal tools and resources to understand or process them. And then we hold on to them. And then that inner child version of ourself is basically in charge of our life because the ego's job is to protect our subconscious. So the ego essentially becomes the bodyguard to our inner child, which means we have different patterns and coping mechanisms that we develop in order to protect that inner child version of ourselves who is still carrying the pain and the hurt and all of the stories and narratives from the past. But simultaneously, our inner child is also carrying the joy and the magic and the fun and the creativity and all of those other childlike aspects as well. So we get to access and unlock that when we begin to build this relationship with our inner child and help that version of ourselves heal, because we all have our own unique experience of our childhood. And we all have childhood trauma, because that's just part of the human experience. It doesn't mean that our parents didn't love us or they were bad parents. It just means that they were doing the best that they could. And we had our own unique experience of childhood.
Yeah. And it's not to say that, you know, that you should blame the child in you, right? Like, we're not using the child as our excuse and everything. It's about finding that inner child to help you maybe understand how you became who you are and kind of learn from that, right? So it's using it in a different way.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Because if we're blaming that child version of ourselves, again, we're outsourcing our personal power, because we're playing the blame game. So it's really about building the relationship, supporting that child version of ourselves, understanding their needs, and really reparenting ourselves so we can meet those needs in a way that actually supports us. And in a way that allows us to step into who we are meant to be in this lifetime.
How do you get there? How do you find that inner child? Like, is that like a meditation process? Is that something you discover through journaling? Or what is the path for something like that?
Yeah.
It just seems like, so, you know what I mean? Like, for somebody who doesn't know how to do that or how to experience that and really get inside of that. Cause I'm kind of like that. I find it hard to, you know, I try the meditation and I can do it a little bit, but I don't know that I'm doing it right or that I feel like I'm getting something from it. So I'm just wondering, how do you get to find that inner child?
Yeah. Yeah. And I can remember, like, not only how abstract I thought really the whole healing journey was at first. I'm like, well, what does it mean and how do you do it? And the inner child work I also found to be not only abstract, but also just kind of weird. I'm like, really? You want me to like have a conversation with my 4-year-old self? Like, that's just weird. But once I started to experience like the benefits of it, I'm like, I'm going to have a conversation with that 4-year-old version of me. So it really looks like everything that you mentioned. So there are different meditations, and I actually have a few inner child workshops, and I love sharing inner child work because I know how transformative it's been for me. So creating a space to actually have a guided visualization to connect with that version of yourself, journaling, you could write a letter to that version of yourself. You could take a picture of yourself as a child and actually just begin to connect and build the relationship. I want to interrupt myself and just mention that this work can be very vulnerable. It could be very vulnerable to connect with this version of yourself, especially if they are carrying a lot of pain and trauma from the past. So if you have resistance to it, or if it feels like it's not accessible, then you get to go slow. You get to dip your toes in. You don't have to dive all the way in, because what a lot of healing is really disguising almost self-aggression. It's like, let's go really hard and do the healing. And it's coming from a place of not truly loving and respecting ourselves. So honoring yourself and where you're at, and get support if you need it. But the inner child relationship is like any relationship. It takes time to develop. And the more energy and intention that we give it, the more that it gets to cultivate.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's so neat. And I'm glad you interrupted to say that, because that is so true. It's a process and it's a marathon, right? And you just got to go slow and work at it and not expect. I'd be like, okay, I talked to my inner child. What now? You know? So you want to kind of take your time with it and really like focus and dive into it. So that's really, really cool. So, you know, you've said, I looked through like your website and your Instagram and all that, so much beautiful stuff. And in your reflections, you noted that your ex-husband exhibited narcissistic traits. So we've talked previously on other episodes about narcissism, and it's just very fascinating to me because of how people see it in so many different ways, how somebody that is one doesn't know they are, if you can change someone that is. So I'm just asking if you can elaborate on the behaviors or actions that led you to kind of see that he was a narcissist, and also how did being in a narcissistic relationship impact your sense of self-worth?
Yeah. So I want to start this off by saying, and I spent a long time trying to diagnose the partner. And that was actually a coping mechanism because I was so focused on him. I got to bypass what I was actually feeling. Yeah. And it's not our job to diagnose people. And I feel like, you know, narcissists and narcissism, it's such a commonly used term now. And ultimately, it's a diagnosis that needs to be provided by an actual like medical professional. So it's also a very underdiagnosed condition because
I think everybody has a little bit of narcissism in them, right? It just in very different ways, some more than others. That's the problem.
Yeah, for sure. And and really it's a manifestation of childhood trauma and a very diminished sense of self-worth. You hear the term narcissist and you think, oh, they have this hyper-inflated ego and they think they're awesome and amazing. And it's actually a facade. It's actually this hyper-inflated ego that is covering up a very low sense of self-worth. And narcissists or people with a pattern of narcissistic behaviors are notorious for attracting people who identify as an empath and highly sensitive people. And this goes all the way back to childhood, which is why childhood trauma shows up in your romantic relationships as adults, which is why inner child healing is so important for everyone, but especially if you have noticed a pattern of toxic relationships, because what happens is our subconscious tries to recreate the relationships that we had with our early caregivers to then create a different outcome, to have a different resolution, except it's happening at a subconscious level. So it's really just repeating the patterns and reinforcing the underlying beliefs and trauma, which isn't actually healing. So for me personally, I could see how I always felt responsible for the emotions of my parents growing up. I always felt like, and this is, I only see this because of the work that I've done. I had no awareness of this at the time, but I could see how in the marriage, I felt like if I could love the partner enough, then they would love themselves. And I thought that relationships were a place to get love. So I thought if I could love him enough, then he would love me enough. But really what happened was I was just abandoning myself. And it's the perfect storm. Someone who is looking to just pull and suck love out of you, and someone with a pattern of narcissism or narcissistic behaviors, and then someone who is a very highly sensitive person who is really just trying to make everyone's life better and truly just wants to give love but isn't loving themselves, and it creates this really perfect storm of a situation. And the common denominator is a low sense of self-worth, because that we like attracts like. So really the partner I was with had a very diminished sense of self-worth. And simultaneously, I had a very diminished sense of self-worth.
Yeah.
And that's why he was the perfect partner for me, because he was a mirror.
Yeah.
And it's not saying that I deserved the abuse or everything that I experienced. And I'm not saying that for any of the listeners either. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the relationships in our life are a mirror, and they're showing us what our inner reality is so that we can actually make those changes, because the experience and awareness of being in a toxic relationship is actually an invitation and a call from your soul to actually go on the healing journey and to actually do the work to evolve into the next level of yourself.
Oh, wow. Wow. That was so beautifully said, because, and so true. We just get so lost in trying to please somebody else and take care of somebody else and do all those things. And you just don't realize and recognize that the true work is within yourself, like you said, right? Once you work on that. And I think you've said that narcissists often seek external validation as well, right? So how do you think individuals can transition from relying on like this external validation to eventually fostering self-empowerment? How do they do that?
Yeah, well, and this wasn't just a parent and the partner I was with. This was a parent of myself and for most people, because we're conditioned to look outside of ourselves for everything, for self-love, for self-acceptance, for self-approval. We're looking outside of ourselves. And the thing is, like, self-love comes from ourself. Self-acceptance comes from ourself. So it doesn't matter if we're getting it from somebody else, because it's not really going to be providing us what we need. So the first step is to looking at how you are looking for that external validation and how you are prioritizing the approval of others over your own self-acceptance.
And I think a lot of it is social media too, really contributes to that, right? All that, the validation that we get just from posting something, you know?
Yeah. And it's really just reinforcing that conditioning. But it's through building the relationship with yourself that you get to actually begin to meet your own needs and develop self-acceptance, develop self-approval. So you can think about the relationship with yourself as any other relationship, because this is something else that was very abstract for me at first. I'm like, first of all, I didn't even know that you had a relationship with yourself, let alone that it's the most important relationship that there is, because it's the foundation for every other relationship in your life. It truly sets the standard. How you treat yourself is going to be what you tolerate from others. So the more that you can cultivate the relationship with yourself, the more that you're able to raise your standards for all the relationships in your life. So you can think about what's important to you in a relationship. It might be things like respect, communication, honesty, support, and then look at the relationship with yourself. How is the relationship with yourself reflecting these areas that you identified as being important to you in a relationship? And then you can begin to build those aspects internally with the relationship with yourself and watch how your life begins to change, because your life is then going to be reflecting of that.
Oh my gosh. So how has this trauma and tragedy changed your life now where you are? How is dating? Are you dating? Are you married now? Or where are you at there and your self-growth and improvement? How has that helped that?
Yeah, so dating has been a journey. So when I first left the marriage, I had no business dating. So naturally, I went on lots of dates. And dating was very much a distraction and a coping mechanism for me, and a way to seek external validation, because I could just swipe and see all the guys that were liking me. And temporarily, it was a band-aid for the fact that I truly didn't like myself at that point in time. And then I was in a relationship for about a year with the most kind and genuine person. Like, to this day, he was just such a kind and genuine man. But, you know, relationships are always going to be our greatest classroom in life. And there's always going to be lots of triggers, and triggers are a gift. The more that we can identify when we are triggered and use it as an opportunity to really understand what is being activated within ourselves, what we're holding on to, what wound from the past is this triggering, then we can actually use it as an opportunity for healing. And I learned so much about myself in that relationship. We were together for a little over a year. And then I recognized that we just weren't aligned anymore. He was a great guy. I had a lot of love for him. But ultimately, we were not aligned. So I made the decision to end the relationship. And since then, I've gone on a few dates, but I've really have been focused on just living and experiencing life and pursuing things that light me up and feel good. And I have the most amazing soul aligned friendships right now. And just so much, like, I've never felt more love for myself and my life as I have, like, as I do right now. And it really goes to show that, like, you don't need a relationship to feel love. And in fact, that's actually when you attract a relationship, because you're entering it from a place of want and desire rather than need and filling a void. So it's interesting, because I haven't really explored dating too much since I've been here in Bali. And also, I've been writing a book and really pursuing other passions in life. But I do have this intuitive knowing that I am entering a partnership this year, which
Oh.
is exciting. Yeah, I know.
You're like, I'm not sure
I'm like,
where.
oh,
Well,
I
I think
am.
it would be hard to know that. I feel like every guy I'd see, I'd be like, I wonder if it's him. I wonder if it's him. You know, you're not
Right?
sure. Every
I
person you
know.
meet would be fun,
Yeah,
though.
which is kind of exciting. It's like,
Yeah. So do they have, so it'd be a silly question, but do they have like the dating sites there, like Bumble and stuff
Yeah.
like that? Like you can meet people that way there?
They do, yeah, and
Oh.
I have a few friends that actually use them. For
Yeah.
me, I am not on the dating apps, and
Yeah.
nothing against them. I think they're a great way to meet people and connect with people. But
Yeah.
again, I just have this intuitive knowing that I'm going to meet my partner in real life,
So you don't
and
need to. You don't need to be on it.
and I just feel like my partner is not on a dating app right now. He's out
Yeah.
living his life, which means I need to be out living my life.
But I wanted to go back to where you said that you ended the relationship with a guy who was wonderful and great. And I
Yeah.
think that's really something important to say is that you had a lot of the wonderful things there,
Yeah.
the love, the kind man, everything that you would want, but it still didn't feel like that was quite your person or something didn't
Yeah.
align. And instead of just sitting in that situation and just, you know, settling for that life, even though it wasn't necessarily settling because he seemed really great,
Yeah.
I love that you took it upon yourself to make that change. And that's really a
Yeah.
hard thing to do, to change something that is going well, right? Just because you realize it may not be your forever. So that was probably a really big step for you to do that.
Yeah, it was. And especially because, when most people think about a toxic relationship, they think about like gaslighting and perhaps manipulation and control and things like that. But if we are choosing to stay in a relationship that we know is not aligned with our values, with the vision that we have for ourselves and our life, that can become a very toxic circumstance
Great
as well.
point.
Especially if we begin to carry resentment towards the relationship. And we do end up settling, and we could end up settling even if the person is great and amazing, but just because they are not meant to be our partner in the long-term future.
Oh my gosh. Wow, what a fascinating story. I was really excited and anxious to talk to you because it's just, I love that you just made the difference for yourself and you just went and did it. I think that is like just incredible. You know, I think that we all dream of doing that or think about making those big changes and you actually did it. That's so cool. I can't even go on like a trip by myself, like nervous, but you know, just going across the entire country. So that's, I'm so proud of you. It's so
Oh, thank
amazing.
you.
That's so amazing. So thank you so much for coming on here. Tell us more about your book, where people can find it, and where they can find your courses you do. Give us all the goods.
Yeah, so my book is available on Amazon as an ebook and also as a paperback. There will be an audio version coming sometime
Oh,
soon, but for
nice.
now, you can get the ebook or the paperback. I also have my podcast, Dear Dumb Bitch, and you
Love
can
it.
it's a lot of fun.
How did you
You
come
can
up with
also,
that name? Like, what did you, where did you come up with that? You're just like, oh, I'm talking to
yeah.
myself.
So actually, the whole like branding of, being a dumb bitch actually was a part of my journey. And this is an interesting story, and I want to share it quickly.
Yeah,
So
please.
when I first left the marriage, I was looking for anyone to come and save me, to come and fix me. So I decided to start working with this like fitness and nutrition coach because, again, old pattern and conditioning of if I look better, then I'll feel better. And he had me making these like green juices, and I was not a green juice girl, but here I am blending like kale and spinach and celery and drinking them every morning. And I was on a real estate team at the time, and one of the girls who I later became really good friends with, she would call it my dumb bitch juice. And I didn't
That's
re and I
awesome.
thought it was so funny. I'm like, yeah, this is my dumb bitch juice. And I didn't realize at the time, but it really was dumb bitch juice because I was drinking it, thinking that something outside of myself could fix me or change how I feel inside. So dumb bitch juice became the delicious metaphorical concoction of all of the ways that we use things outside of ourselves to change how we feel inside. And then I really went with I had a dumb bitch era because I was using all kinds of things outside of myself to try to change how I felt inside. And as I was, beginning to just like think of names for the podcast, I was like, I actually still have the voice note where I was like, just kind of like thinking out loud. And I was like, dear dumb bitch. And it's like, yes, that's it. Because we all have an inner dumb bitch who's
We
teaching
do.
us life lessons when we actually like embrace her and pay attention and notice her.
That's awesome. It's a great story. So, okay, interrupted you. You're telling us where we can find your courses and all that good stuff.
And probably the best way to connect with me is on Instagram. I share a lot of content on there. I love stories. I'm always on there. And I have all the information for my programs on there as well. So you can
Wonderful.
connect with me there at I am Kel Cal. Send me a message. I'd love to know what you thought about the episode. And if you have any
Yes.
questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Oh, I love that. Perfect. And I'll have it in the description as well of the episode. So before you go, I like to do a little from Mrs. to Ms. fun facts, kind of this or that. Would you rather relationship driven? Okay. So I have 10 questions for you. You just tell me whichever one applies to you. Number one, would you rather have an adventurous date exploring a new city together or a cozy night in with a homemade dinner and a movie?
Adventurous date.
Adventurous. If on a deserted island, would you rather sunset skinny dip or midnight beach bonfire?
Sunset skinny dip.
Would you rather date someone who shares all your hobbies and interests, but has different values, or someone with similar values, but few shared interests?
Same values.
Same values. And I think that's really important with the alignment
Yeah.
that we kind of talked
Yeah.
about too.
Yeah.
Number four, freedom with limited connection or a deep connection with compromises?
Freedom with limited connection. I would say I'm going connection.
Yeah, like the deep connection with a few compromises. Yeah. Would you rather have an unforgettable first date but no second date, or just a mediocre first date that leads to a long-term relationship?
Mediocre first
As
date that
long
leads
as
to a
it doesn't
long-term relationship.
continue mediocre. You gotta step up, mister. Number six, blindfolded surprises or playful role play?
Playful role play.
Oh, I think you're right. First person to ever say that. I think everybody's too scared to say it, or nobody's ever done it. I've never done role play, so I don't know.
Haven't either, but
You
that
haven't
just
either, but it
felt
sounds fun. Number seven, would you rather have the ability to read your partner's mind during sex or be able to control their sensations with just a touch?
Control sensations.
Yeah, I like that. Trying new positions or mastering the old ones?
Trying new.
Yeah. Number nine, slow dancing in the living room or spontaneous dance moves in the kitchen?
Oh, they both sound so, like
So,
such a vibe.
I know.
I'm gonna do spontaneous in the kitchen.
The kitchen. Number 10, tease to build anticipation or straight for the fireworks?
Tease to build
Tease
anticipation.
for play. Yeah, that's good. Thanks for playing that. I love always hearing people's
That was fun.
responses, and you never know what we're going to get. It takes a lot to think about it. But thank you once again for joining me, Cal. I love having you here. You are just radiating. I mean, you seem so happy, and that is just what we want for everybody. And that's why we keep doing these episodes, just for people to learn and, you know, hear about new things and new ways and things to try. And so I hope everybody feels the same and has the same motivation that you did, you know, to just get up and make a difference. So that's really, really amazing. So thank you once again. And everybody, you can find this episode. It will be out a little bit later. And you can catch me on From Mrs. to Ms. on Instagram, any of the social media at from.mrs.to.ms. You can email me with any questions, concerns, or if you want to let me know how you love this episode, you can email me at info@frommrs.to.ms.net. And we thank you once again, Cal, for joining us. And you guys have a great week. Bye.